If God exists, what is the one question you would ask him? Statistically speaking, just now across all of our minds, even though there were many questions, the number one question asked in this room would be something around the topic of evil or suffering. I think that's because evil and suffering touch the lives of everyone we know. In the past 2 weeks alone, I've seen it in a number of ways. I've mourned alongside of friends who have lost a baby. I know people who are seeking information and answers to mysterious illnesses that they seem to have. I've checked the news, and of course, whenever we do that, we're struck with tragedy and mourning and death. I've gone on social media and seen the Me Too campaign and seen how many friends and family members have been affected by sexual harassment and assault. I mean, of course, if we go even further back, we can see more and more. In the last few months, we've seen horrendous natural disasters. We've seen shootings that have affected the lives of so many. So it's no wonder, then, that when we come to the issues of why God, how can someone believe in God, these questions of suffering and evil confront us. We have to answer them. We have to deal with them in some way, somehow, because there's no escaping it. Suffering, pain, evil, they all do exist. Now, over the next few weeks, we're going to be continuing at looking at a number of tough questions about the Christian faith and of God. Next week, we're going to look at how can we even trust the Bible. We're going to look at questions like, is Jesus really the only way to God? And is there any possible evidence for the resurrection of Jesus if he truly is the one way? And then on November 26th, we're going to have a Q&A Sunday. And this is an opportunity for anyone and everyone to be able to ask questions, things that might stand in the way of someone coming to know who God is, questions that you maybe as a skeptic have to ask of the church and of people who follow Jesus. If you want to ask a question, I'd encourage you, in the seat backs in front of you or behind you, you'll be able to pull out a little card that says, "Don't check your brain," at the door on the front. And then on the back, feel free to write down your question and leave it on the seat as you go this morning, or there's white tables out in our front entrance, and you can drop them off there by November 19th. Or you can email questions@emmanuelonline.ca, and we're going to do our best to answer as many of those questions as we can. But let's get back to this week, to the topic of suffering and evil. It's a big one, and I want to look at it in two ways. I want to look at it philosophically, and I want to look at it spiritually this morning. So let's start with a philosophical examination of the topic of, if there is a good God, how could evil exist? How could suffering exist? Let's start with just the term evil and what evil is. Evil, as a philosophical perspective, isn't something that exists on its own. In fact, it's actually a corruption of something that is good. Rust on a car in and of itself doesn't exist unless there was a car that was intact at one point. Tooth decay doesn't happen without healthy teeth to start with. The same can be said of suffering. Suffering in its of itself is just a state of being in distress, discomfort, or pain, none of which exist just on their own, because they just would be if they could just be that of suffering. When we look at these two things, evil and suffering, we go, how could a good God allow for this? How could a good God allow these things to be corrupted or these things to be missing? I mean, Norman Geiser says, evil is like a wound in an arm or moth holes in a garment. It exists only in another, but not in itself. So how did it get there? How did it get there? That leads us to a few objections that come at the Christian faith. Well, if there is a good God, if you people believe that there's this good God, I think I have some problems with that. The first objection we often see in the philosophical realm is this: the existence of evil in the universe proves that there is no all-good and all-powerful God. Now, it seems like a sound objection to me, but quickly we find it actually puts us in a different philosophical dilemma. If someone is going to claim that there is no God because evil exists in the world, one person has to ask, how do we judge evil then, if it's not something in and of itself? It's actually impossible to tell what is evil unless we have something that is absolutely good. There's a philosopher named Ron Rhodes, and he puts it this way. He said, we would be like a person on a boat at sea on a cloudy night without a compass. That is, there would be no way to distinguish north from south without the absolute reference point of the compass needle. God is our reference point for distinguishing good from evil. So no matter whether or not you think God is a good God, there has to be a God who is good, or some type of law or being or universal constant that is completely good in order to judge whether or not something is evil. So some people go, well, that's well and good, but isn't it disgusting within the Christian worldview then that God is okay with suffering? They say, this is why I take comfort in naturalism or evolution. But my response to that would be, isn't Darwinian evolution a little bit sicker? I mean, when we talk about it, we talk about the survival of the species, the survival of the fittest. And what happens with survival of the fittest is that species prey upon one another. The strong, the powerful, the rich prey upon the weak, the oppressed, and the poor. And for this philosophy, for this worldview, it's not just something that exists, it's something that's encouraged. We want to see the strongest survive, which means we need, nay, we want the weakest to suffer or be wiped out. That's a problem for me with that argument. The second objection is this: if there is an all-good and all-powerful God, he should get rid of evil right now. That seems reasonable, right? We don't want evil to exist in the world. We don't want those things which are not good to take place. I don't think there's anyone in here who's rooting on the side of bad things happening. But there's a guy named Paul Little who warns, be careful what you wish for. He says, if God was to stamp out all evil today, he would have to do a complete job of it. It would have to include our lies and our impurities, the times we've lacked love, or our failure to do good. Suppose God were to decree that tonight at midnight, all evil would be removed from our universe. Who of us would still be here at 12:01? You know, we believe that people are actually the agents of hurt and brokenness in our world. The Christian worldview, we call this sin. And that, so what scholars do, philosophers who are skeptics or atheists, will go, well, then explain to me this. If there were an all-good and all-powerful God, surely he could have arranged things so that human beings would never sin. There's a simple response to that, though. That God could make us so that we do not sin, but then he could not have given us free will. Many of us have heard this argument before. We would lose the very thing that gives us humanness, our ability to choose. I believe that God created us to be loved and to love him in response, not because he had to, but because he wanted to. But love has to be a choice. If it's not a choice, it's just obedience. And obedience is a good thing. It's a sign of love, but it's not love and in and of itself. Peter Kreeft says, real love, our love of God and our love of each other, must involve a choice. But with the granting of that choice comes the possibility that people would choose instead to hate. Think about it. Do you even want to be involved in relationships with friends or family members, boyfriends, girlfriends, fiancés, spouses, when choice isn't in and of itself? Think of when someone does your dishes for you when it's your turn and you didn't even ask. It's a nice thing. A gift is only special because of the thought and energy that went into it when it wasn't necessary. That's what makes it precious to us. I don't think we want to give that up. But we have to if we say, okay, God should have just taken away our choice. You know, they might say then that if it's true that our free will is the cause of evil, then God himself is responsible for evil because he gave us that free will. But I think just because God gives us a gift of free will doesn't mean that he's responsible for how we use that free will. It's up to us. There's one more objection that I want to focus on, because I think for a lot of philosophers and people who wrestle through this subject, they go, that is all well and good. Maybe I can concede that it is possible. But then they look out at the world and they say natural disasters aren't blamed by people. Natural disasters cannot be blamed on human free will and sin, since horrible natural disasters occur regularly in our world. It's impossible then that an all-good and all-powerful God exists. That one took some mulling over for me, because it's a really difficult question to answer. It's a difficult objection to wrestle with, isn't it? Because we do look at the world, and sometimes some of those things are caused by people, but other times they are not. And it's easy. If we start with that first problem, we all know that humans cause some of our disasters. Even naturalists, those from an atheist worldview perspective, go and they look and do the studies and do the science and go, yes, us as humans with our choices are making a change in the environment. We can see that. We can get behind that. It explains some of our storms and some of those things, but it doesn't explain all of them. To which I think there's another partial answer to this question, which is that in order for our planet to be habitable, there has to be laws and physics and constants that make it for us so that we as people can live on this planet. Take it, for instance, gravity. Gravity is great because it keeps our feet on the ground. But gravity can also lead to an avalanche. Fire is a great thing that we have. Fire helps us to cook food and to prepare it. But the problem is fire can burn us. We all know that water quenches our thirst and is necessary for life. But it's the very substance in which we can drown. You see, in my understanding of this problem of suffering and evil, most of what we look at as stuff that we dislike, if you flip the other side of the argument, is actually some of the things that we like most. Some of the things that we believe are the most important things to us, whether they're things that allow us to live or they're choices that we're allowed to make. It's like that ability to do good. It also means that we have the ability to do evil. Now, that's not a full and comprehensive argument, and this is something that sometimes we wrestle with, and that's why I think we need to go beyond just a philosophical examination. I think we can go pretty honestly with good integrity and reason and go, I don't think that suffering and evil is a good way to disprove who God is. But you know what? That answer doesn't help people in times of hurt. You know, it really doesn't. If someone came up to us and they're going through mourning the loss of someone, or they're experiencing health issues or social issues or whatever it is that is causing their heart to break, if we just come up to someone and go, you know what, it doesn't disprove that there's a God, we're not a helpful human being. We're not really caring at all, so there must be more than that. The philosophical argument is great when we come to somebody who is wrestling through these issues from more of a logical background. We need to have that response. In 1 Peter 3:15, which we looked at last week, just briefly, we talked about how we're supposed to, as Christians, have a reason for the hope that we have. And we need to reason with these people logically because it's important. But we also need to care for people, which takes us to the spiritual aspect, the personal look at pain and suffering. When we get there, what do we do with God? Even if God could exist in spite of these objections, what good is a God who allows this stuff to happen? As we look at the spiritual aspects of suffering, I want to present three characteristics of a God who would allow us to suffer. And then my fourth point will be presenting a case for hope to a suffering world. So what kind of God would allow suffering? The first is a holy God. That word holy means that they're unblemished, perfect, set apart. We suffer because our choices go against a holy God. We choose what he wouldn't have chosen for us. God takes this defiance very seriously. When we look at the story of Adam and Eve, he told them, if you eat this fruit on this tree, you will surely die. Then, of course, they had a choice. But what did they go ahead and do? They chose to eat that fruit. Not because of a lack of fruit. We know that there was plenty of other fruit and things to eat. But they chose to make a choice because they wanted something which they felt they did not have. And it's because of that action that God's good creation turned against him, and now we're subject to pain and death because of our own choosing. Now I know, again, some people look at this and be like, but why did God put that fruit there? Why did he leave them something that would inevitably lead to death if they took it? But then we go back to that argument for free will. If there was nothing to choose against him, how do we choose for him? There's no choice without it. God had to provide an option. The second characteristic of a God who would allow us to suffer is a God who is a good father. What makes a good parent? You know, as much as most of us don't want to hear it when we're young, one of the good things about a parent is a parent who disciplines us or even allows us to experience the consequences of our life. The writer of the book of Hebrews tells us what God is up to when he allows his children to go through things. It tells us that he uses hardship or allows hardship to happen for our growth. I love the paraphrase in the Message version of the Bible, which says this, in this all-out match against sin, others have suffered far worse than you, to say nothing of what Jesus went through, all that bloodshed. So don't feel sorry for yourselves, or have you forgotten how good parents treat their children, and that God regards you as his children? My dear child, don't shrug off God's discipline, but don't be crushed by it either. It's the child he loves that he disciplines. The child he embraces, he also corrects. God is educating you. That's why you must never drop out. He's treating you as dear children. This trouble you're in isn't punishment, it's training. The normal experience of children. Only irresponsible parents leave children to fend for themselves. Would you prefer an irresponsible God? We respect our own parents for training and not spoiling us. So why not embrace God's training so we can truly live? While we were children, our parents did what seemed best to them. But God is doing what is best for us, training us to live God's holy best. At the time, discipline isn't much fun. It always feels like it's going against the grain. Later, of course, it pays off handsomely, for it's the well-trained who find themselves mature in their relationship with God. God isn't a bad father. He's the best father, one who has our interests at heart. The pain we experience aren't punishment, but an experience for our best. Yesterday, I was at Fish Trap Creek, and right by the picnic shelter, there's this really big tree that kids can go under and then climb up. And we were at this fundraiser, and tons of kids were climbing up, and Sky decided she was going to follow a group of older boys up this tree. And so she climbed, and she climbed, and she climbed, and then suddenly she screamed. It was time to come down. And I stood outside of that tree and just tried to talk her down. And the whole time, I'm sure all of Elwood Park could hear my daughter screaming. She thought I was being absolutely brutal and mean. She was looking at me going, "Dad, why aren't you helping me? You're supposed to be helping me." And I looked up and I talked her down because I wanted to teach her a couple of things. The first is, if you can get into a situation, you can get yourself out of it most times. And the second thing is, always think about the situation before you put yourself in it. So we had a good little conversation when she got to the bottom. All this to say that God knows what he is doing in our lives. Surely, if we believe that there is a God who is all good, all powerful, all knowing, he must know things that we can't know. He just has to. He must have a plan that goes beyond us. In Isaiah 55, verse 8 and 9, we see God say, "My thoughts are not your thoughts, neither are your ways my ways. As the heavens are higher than the earth, so are my ways higher than your ways, and my thoughts than your thoughts." I like the analogy of the person and the bear. Surely there must be a bigger difference between God and us than us and a bear in terms of our understanding. Imagine you're walking through a forest one day and you stumble along a bear caught into a trap. You feel bad for this bear. So you go, "I got to get this bear out of this trap." Are you going to go up to this bear and simply just try to free the trap on its foot? Of course not. You're going to get attacked. So what do? We call somebody and the tranquilizer comes out and we shoot the bear. What's the bear thinking in that moment? "This is a hunter. He's going to kill me. This is a bad news." And then he slips into an unconscious or semi-conscious state. Now, to release that bear trap, you actually have to put pressure back down onto the spring, which means you have to take the bear's leg and shove it down into the trap further. Now, if that bear is semi-conscious, what's it thinking? "This guy's a sicko. Not only is he trying to shoot me, now he's making me suffer until the bitter end." But we know that if we don't take care of that bear and we don't inflict a little bit of pain along the way, that bear will surely die. We know much more than the bear. So how do we relate to God? I would say surely we're smarter than the average bear, aren't we? God does this same thing to us sometimes. Sometimes we can't comprehend the motives. We can't comprehend the situation that we're in. And you know what? That doesn't help us when we're in the midst of the pain. It doesn't help us when we're going through these things in life. But we have to know that there is a God who is all-loving, all-powerful, and all-knowing, who goes beyond us. So that leads me to the third point. Why do we even trust in him? And I believe it is because we have a God who allows us, the God who allows us to suffer also chose to suffer. You see, a loving parent is not the one who never allows a child to suffer, but a parent who suffers alongside of their child. As Christians, we believe that God chose to do just that. We believe that God came in a human form in the person of Jesus. He took on the experience of human suffering. He took on hunger and thirst, sadness, betrayal, mockery, torture, and then a brutal death. Through his life, Jesus went through all sorts of things. He lived in poverty. He was misunderstood by his family. He lost the lives of those close to him. Then he died in a brutal manner. He was whipped, slapped, spat upon, hung on a Roman cross, left for hours to hang there and slowly breathe his last while thorns pressed deeply into his head and there were nails in his hands and in his feet. What good is all of this? What good is a God who chooses to suffer? What good is a God who allows us to experience all of this suffering and pain just to be disciplined? What does that get us? Nietzsche says this. He says, the gods justified human life by living it themselves, which was the only satisfactory response ever invented. What good is all of it? The good is that Jesus chose to suffer alongside of us to give us hope, to go beyond the suffering and pain, to ultimately bring an end to it. We believe that Jesus chose to suffer alongside of us because he didn't want to create us and abandon us. He knew this stuff was going to come about. He knew it because he gave us choices. He knew it because we're going to choose to bring a destruction of paradise. And so he said, no, you're not going it alone. I'm going to experience it alongside of you through brutal pain and suffering. The Bible tells us that the cost of our sin, the cost of that brokenness, the evil, the pain, all that we bring to this world is death. But the gift of God is eternal life through belief in Jesus and what he has done. Now, you might be sitting here and you might not be satisfied. I know I wrestle with this, and sometimes I go, this isn't a full answer. I want to know more. But I hope that as we wrestle alongside this, that we can find that we can believe that there is a God who is all good, who is all-powerful, who is knowable, who is loving. And that even when we're experiencing the hurt and the frustration, that we find that hope. We find that hope of that good God. We find that hope of knowing that we don't suffer alone. Hope that one day pain and suffering will be over. We read that in the Bible. We read that in the meantime, though, in the meantime, before we get to that place where there is no more pain and suffering, that there's a purpose. What we go through isn't purposeless. The pain, the suffering, all that, no, it is training. If you have questions here this morning, I would encourage you after the service to come and ask, come and talk about this more. If you're going through this pain and stuff, I would encourage you to reach out, and we would love to talk to you, the pastors, the elders, the staff here at the church. We would love to care for you. We would love to talk to you. We'd love to answer this question more for you. But know that there is a hope that's accessible to you. There is a hope that you can just reach out and ask for. There's a hope that when we acknowledge what we have done and our part of bringing pain and suffering to the world, that there's an answer and a response, that when we confess that, when we admit to that and believe in what Jesus has done to bring us hope, that we will experience an understanding, a peace, a comfort in spite of it all. So I'm choosing to be more than a bear stuck in a trap. I choose to be a person who hopes, and I hope that you will choose that alongside of me. Let's pray. Father, thank you for this morning. Thank you for your word. Thank you for the fact that you are a God who chooses to walk alongside of us, to suffer alongside of us. God, that you give a reason to suffering. And God, even when it's hard, God, and I know it's hard for me, and I know it's hard for so many here, probably everyone, but God, that in the midst of these times, would we just have a peace and an understanding that even though we don't understand what it's all for, what it's all about, that we can trust that you are an all-good, all-powerful, knowing, and loving God. So God, as we turn back in worship, would we just be able to focus on you in that? Would we be able to just rise above that? And for those who are here this morning who still wrestle with that, God, would they know that this is a good place to wrestle with that? And God, we trust that you will answer the questions that we have. So God, we thank you for you this morning, for being a God who intercedes on our behalf to be the hope that we have. We love you, Jesus. In your name, amen.